That doesn't count. Everybody was in choir in grade school.
Or band.
I was in band, but I don't play a musical instrument.
What did you play in grade school?
A trumpet.
Did you learn it well?
No.
Oh,
I was such a like rambunctious little shit to make me sit down and like try to learn. That is a very focused and menial task. My little brain could not take that. And that was the worst choice. They should have put me in choir.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber on the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me again is my co-host Richard Wally from Portland, Oregon.
Yay! And with me is my co-host Cassidy Robinson from the Los Angeles area.
And today we're going to be reviewing Ghostbusters and Star Trek Beyond.
Thank you.
You asked earlier if I sing. That's kind of like singing.
You pronounced it correctly, though, at least. I was just happy that somebody pronounced it correctly, finally.
Finally, right? Yeah. No, that's the only way I hear it in my head whenever I read it on a poster or on some signage in on the street.
I never heard that in my head, but then when you did, I was like, yeah, that is how it should be said. So you're right. You're correct, sir.
And at the end of the show, in our Netflix homework, we are going to review We Are Still Here. We took another break last weekend. I feel like we should kind of somewhat address this for the five or six people who do listen to us regularly. We're not pod fading. Schedules and me and and you went on like a mini vacation last weekend.
I did go. We went to Crater Lake. It is a national park where a volcano had gone off in prehistoric times and formed many, many enchanted features within the earth.
Right.
But the biggest feature is this giant lake that's like in the middle of this where a mountain peak should be. It is very beautiful, too. There's quite a few waterfalls. It was fun to go with. We went with a bunch of friends, too. One of them brought their daughter. It was kind of an interesting trip. Oh, yeah. People got very grumpy because there was lots of mosquitoes and I was all still perky and happy. And
watch out. Zika virus.
Yeah. Actually, what's funny is like all of us were covered except for Jackie because I was like a madman just like killing them on her.
Mm-hmm.
And she had none when like everybody else was completely covered. It was very strange.
You know, there's this thing they invented a while called bug repellent.
Yeah, but so Cassidy, bug repellent, most of them have DEET, which is a poison which could poison oh, we're not supposed to be talking about this. You tricked me. You son of a bitch. Well, there's hormonal changes. Things happen within you. So
right. Well, okay. So I work at a health food store that's all hippy dippy and shit.
Sure.
So everything we sell that's even the stuff that's not edible is organic. So organic shampoo, non-GMO soap, whatever the fuck. Right? We sell bug repellent that, you know, it's probably just like apple vinegar and like essential oils or something. And well, they're just calling it bug repellent. That probably doesn't work at all. But there's other options.
There are, and we had several. They just like this is the thing is all of us were using poisoned bug repellent and citronella candles and every method conceived by man to get rid of mosquitoes. And these mosquitoes were not having any of it.
They were monster mosquitoes.
Yeah, and they'd fly really slowly, so that was nice. And you would hear them in your ears. They were quite horrible. But I made them go on this big hike. Not everyone, but just the people that were in my car. I made them go on this big hike to this like huge. It was a beautiful waterfall. It was very early in the morning, and they were all very grumpy. It was fun for me. And then we also did drive up the 101, and if you know anything about the 101, it's this beautiful stretch of highway that runs along the Oregon and Northern California coast. I believe some of the Southern as well.
Oh, we have a 101 down here, but there's nothing all that gorgeous about it.
Oh, this is
it runs beautiful. Through downtown LA.
We went to a lighthouse that was made in olden times, and it's just cute, and you feel like you're like an Anne of Avonlea or something. And then, the Devil's Punch Bowl. It's this weird, large rock formation. Because there's lots of cliffs on the 101 in Oregon. Mm. And so that's what makes it particularly beautiful. And the green trees and the lushness of the forest. You know, that vague middle earthiness that you talk about.
Yeah, you expect giant rock troll to pop out of every corner of every weird willow brook or whatever.
Yeah, that was my vacation, as we went deeper into Middle Earth.
Hunting for rock trolls.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Killed a many, have them on my wall.
My weekends were not as exciting. I did go a couple weeks ago. I did go see Raiders of the Lost Ark on the beach.
Oh, that's fun.
There's this weird movie program that somebody puts on. I forget who. It might be
it's probably Escape Portlanders.
No, I think it was it's Biola College, I think, is the one who puts it on, which is kind of funny because they're like a Christian university. Hmm. But in Huntington Beach, they have this huge blow up screen.
Be careful, that's how they get you.
And then they show movies on the beach. And then they have a local radio DJ, not even a local radio, he was a radio DJ from somewhere else who came to do this. And he was the cheesiest, morning zoo radio guy you've ever heard in your life. And then there was this local band that was equally as cheesy that opened for the movie. Cause you can't really show the movie until it gets dark.
Sure.
So from 5 o'clock to whatever, 8:30. They have to have something going on, so they have this band play that nobody was there to see, and who were not particularly good. But it was funny because the DJ guy had to present it it was a show, and every time he'd go up there to introduce the band or talk about whatever, whatever you can get at the food snack bars, he would always say "Man, what a concept! Can you believe this?"
oh my!
Yeah, we get it. It's a movie on the beach. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, they do those. They do movies in the park all over here.
Mm.
And it's been going for years. So it's not that much of a concept here. So well, they'd be like, this is the norm here in Portland.
Right.
We show movies
in outdoor arenas. Yeah. No, they do that park stuff and whatever out here here too. But
well, they did it at ISU as well. The Idaho State University, for all those who don't know what we're talking about.
Yes, our old stomping grounds. But this was sort of a test run. I went, and actually, funnily enough, I went with friends. We had to leave early because we were incredibly ill-prepared. We were just oh, it's the beach. So my two friends, they went swimming, which I don't swim in shark-infested waters. That's my rule. But they went swimming. So all day they were sandy and wet.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the nighttime, we all kind of forgot that when you're on the beach, it gets a lot colder than inland California.
Right.
So we were all kind of freezing and using our towels as blankets as we were sitting and watching the movie. And everybody who lives in the Midwest or somewhere is going to be laughing at me because by freezing, I mean it was probably 62 degrees. But so we ended up leaving about 3/4 of the way through the movie because everyone was just kind of so miserable they couldn't really enjoy themselves anymore. But this was kind of a test run because in August they're going to be showing Jaws. And I want to see Jaws on the beach. But I'm going to bring blankets next time and a hoodie. All right, let's go ahead and get on with the movie news. It looks like Legendary may be the studio who brings us the live-action Pokemon movie we've always wanted.
Well, when we posted this, they were battling, and now they actually caught the rights. You got to see that? See what I did there?
Saw what you did. Yeah, so, I think we have a couple stories about Legendary here, and They're definitely trying to build the brand with very recognizable IPs, and this is a kind of coveted one, especially now with the whole Pokemon Go thing, putting it in the cultural conscience again.
Resurging it, yeah. Well, it's also Legendary is now owned by China, which I don't know if that means anything to anybody else unless you're a super movie nerd, but they're owned by a company in China, so they're actually a Chinese company. Pokemon has this kind of multi-country
cross-national
accessibility. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a global brand. And so it is a smart choice to pick up. And also beyond that, here's my thing. Is one of the newer articles about this Legendary thing is they've talked about making the live action version not about kids going out and catching Pokemon, but about a Pikachu being a detective and solving like little mysteries. That sounds to me incredibly lame, but sure, make it for your direct to streaming, which is the new direct to DVD, and release it so all the kiddies and adult men who, you know, are stunted like ourselves and who will go and watch it. But if you're going to make a big screen live adaptation, make it like classic and about kids. Like there is a story there, like this weird coming of age, dog fighting, love and perils type story.
Michael Vick thing going on.
Yes. This weird Pikachu detective thing, I guess it might sell better across, maybe it just sells better the Chinese and Japanese market, but I don't see it being a great domestic idea. So, any thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like the video game thing, and this is both issues. Like the video game situation, which is we've yet to see a really good video game adaptation to screen. Or one that at least breaks from the small fan base that the video game was already going to get into the theater anyway, or not, in the case of most of the movies. We've also never seen a really successful anime to live-action adaptation.
Well, this had a large, like, cartoon, like, normal cartoon following, too. I mean, technically, it's an anime, kind of.
It is. I mean, it is. It's a Japanese anime. It was brought over to America and redubbed in English. Actually, probably is more strictly Japanese in a lot of ways than some anime. Like, Giant Robot, you can do in any language. But, you know, we're talking about, like, in this very kind of fantasy universe. What has its own set of rules and has its own kind of society. Like, I mean, basically I think everyone understands it because they sort of have seen the show or at least know something about it. So maybe it's translatable, but I think, like, I don't know. Like, the only way I could see this movie, like, being done and looking halfway decent and having the right tone is A, if they don't take it too seriously. And B, if they make the monsters look pretty good and not just like CGI blobs all over the place.
I don't know how you don't do that, even if you made them. I'm sorry, even if you use puppets,
right?
These things are going to look strange.
Well, right
they
now.
They are very animated.
Right.
I don't feel like there's, I feel like they're going to have to, I think they'd almost look better being CGI things. If as long as they have the right textures and you have the right brightness and colorfulness in the palette of
I'm not saying, like, do away with CGI altogether. I'm saying, like, there's a difference between certain kinds of CGI. And I think, specifically, I was thinking the director who did Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle. Mm-hmm. He also did that little alien movie, CJ5 or CJ12 or whatever it was called.
Okay.
And the look of that creature was kind of Pokemon-esque anyway. And then there was another movie that came out in China and did gangbusters. It was a Chinese exclusive release. I think it maybe had a small, like, Asian market release and maybe a foreign release in America. But it was, like, this huge blockbuster over there and actually, like, broke records for their market. And it was all about, like, little monsters. And I've seen stills and stuff from it. And the look in that movie, I wish I could remember the title, but the look in that movie would work for a Pokemon thing. So I said, get the Shaolin Soccer guy, because he'll make it kind of fun and energetic and bubblegummy. And then, yeah, don't take it too seriously.
I think you have to embrace the cartooniness of it, like, kind of. Because if you make these, like, live act, like, realistic looking, it's going to lose a lot of its pill and be very strange looking. And you know, also,
we
beyond
the gritty Pokemon movie.
No, we don't. And that's an American sensibility right now. Right. Like, truthfully, a domestic, like, we got to make it gritty and blah, blah, blah. You don't want that. I mean, I would almost look at something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit to kind of almost gauge, which that has some gritty weirdness to it, but it's more in the story and the characters than the actual, like, look of the animation. The animation is big, bright, and bubbly.
Right.
So I would almost look at that. But yeah, no, I want to see, like, kids going out and catching some Pokemon. If it's going to be a movie, just do the movie.
Right.
I know what's wrong with us. Okay, let's move on. No, we want to talk about the Pokemon.
Apparently.
Oh, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this. So Saw 8, which is the inevitability, even though they did a Saw movie to end all Saw movies.
Yeah, Saw the final chapter.
I think it's only been like 3 or 4. I don't think it's been that long, no. Realistically. But it feels like it because there was an onslaught of Saw movies from the first one to the last one. I saw all of them as an anthropological journey after they'd all been released. I don't remember any of them. Well, no, that's not true. I remember one because it particularly pissed me off. I think it was like it must have been like number 5 or 6. It was just a recap of all the other movies with 15 minutes of new original content. That really, really pissed me off. But it was good to watch because I got to watch how, like, big, horrible these kind of things unfold. So now they're back and saying, yes, we have to redo the Saw movies because it's been so long since we've had a Saw movie. they've picked, the people that are probably coming in, it's not locked down, but are Michael Sprigg and Peter Sprigg, probably most best known from, Daybreakers. It was this weird vampire, like, B movie that came out a couple years ago that was actually B movie, like not like faux B movie where you're trying to be B movie, but like they were going for it seriously. So I kind of gave them clout for that. It was sort of silly though, which a lot of B movies are. So
it was, if I recall it, like, who was in that? That you had Ethan Hawke, and it was like this kind of like dystopian future thing. It was almost more of a sci-fi movie than it was a horror film. It just happened to have vampires in it. And it had this kind of post Matrix rainy sort of, cyber noir look to it. It was, it was a lot of style. I wasn't that into it, but,
it wasn't necessarily that good, but I just gave it points for actually being a real B movie, you know, like they didn't try to make it look like from the 1950s or 60s. They didn't try to do this faux-ness. They tried to do like a serious movie, but like,
there wasn't any irony in it.
Yeah, and so I kind of gave it credit just for that. I was like, good job. As them coming on as the Saw 8 directors, I don't know. The Saw movies are terrible, so I don't... This means very little to me.
Yeah, I don't really care. I did not go on that journey with you. I saw Part 1, James Wan's Saw, which is like... It's okay. I mean, as far as what it was kind of a little bit of Cube meets Seven. And it had like an okay sort of tightly written, all sort of directed towards a surprise ending kind of structure.
It had a strangely familiar cast. Like there was like weird Danley Glover was all of a sudden in it, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and hi, Cary Elwes, and it's good for what it is. I think James Wan obviously has gone on to do bigger, better things, but it was a nice little thriller, basically, that had some kind of production design to it that's somewhat memorable. And that's why they made 12 more of them. What was smart about the movie, if they were meaning to do it at all, was it built in this whole, you know, kind of concept of, you know, a guy trapping people and then making them do terrible things to themselves. And it created this whole formula that you could keep doing these movies with. And they did.
Oh, they did.
And people went and saw them. Like, they were, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like Puppet Master where like two or three of them people more or less saw and then the rest were directed video. Like these movies did well in theaters almost every time.
Right.
People couldn't get enough of, you know, people crawling through barbed wire or whatever.
They loved it. Well, I even think of one of a friend of ours, a girlfriend who hates horror, but watched all of those movies. And to me, that just seems very strange. It was a very strange thing when she said that. And I was like, how? But, you know, I don't know things.
Okay, do we want to do this last story about Blair Witch?
Oh, we can do that in 3 seconds, so sure.
Okay, go for it.
So, Adam Wingard, he's a cool director. He had this Woods movie that was coming out that I was very excited for, and now it's a Blair Witch movie. Apparently, Lionsgate has been holding it back, which is... I guess a surprise, but if they would have just said Adam Wingard is doing a Blair Witch project, I probably would have been more excited. Now it's kind of like they told me I was getting something fresh and original, and then they made it not as much. I'm still excited because I think Adam Wingard is very talented. He did Your Next and The Guest.
Yeah.
Both very stylish and very cool little horror thriller thingies. So I'm still excited for it, but I don't know. I will, I guess, go back to Blair Witch now that it's been a lot of years.
Yeah, you know, funnily enough, I've never seen Blair Witch Project.
Well, I was very against it when it came out because it was actually the first handheld horror. And I was like, blah, 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 blah. And I was even a fanboy back then at the ripe age of like 10. Specifically... I was against it. So, and this one from just watching the trailer, you can see it's very much not handheld. So,
yeah. I didn't think it would be. But, and, you know, to be fair, Blair Witch wasn't the first. It was just the first that really kind of kicked off the style in a big way.
Oh. I mean, I you could be right. I can't recall any others before that in a big way.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, you know, there's like the Mondo movies and stuff that kind of. Were doing similar things, or like Cannibal Holocaust had found footage parts in it.
Yeah, but they didn't really do it in that. They didn't do it for the full length, and they didn't really do it. This was the first, right. Like...
Where the conceit itself was, this is actual footage of a real event.
Yeah, and a person... Yeah. Well, I still am somewhat against it because I do like framing. And I mean, even with this new, I'm even almost against this new naturalistic thing that they shoot a lot of movies as where the camera is just kind of there watching. I like framing. I like that movies are fake. I'm already aware that they are. You don't have to try to bring me in more. Anyways, that's another thing we're talking about. It's fine. Adam Wingard's enough of a talent that I'm like, okay, we'll see what he brings to it.
Yeah. I would have to see the original to really gauge a reaction for how excited or not excited I should be. Everyone kind of forgets about Blair Witch 2, Book of Souls, or whatever it was called.
I remember, actually, what's funny is because it had more live, like shot movie stuff.
Yeah.
I was vaguely into it because of that. I would like to go back to it as a non... 10-year-old ranting at the world and see if it still holds up as good to me.
And actually, you know, say what you will about Blair Witch and having not liked it as a kid, like, it did start essentially like an entire new genre in horror film, and it
Well, I've since warmed to the handheld
thing. Yeah, because like the VHS movies are, you know, some of the shorts in that are kind of cool, and I am a big fan of Cloverfield, and I defend that movie when a lot of people don't.
Yeah, Wreck and Quarantine were fun too. I think there's been a handful that are pretty good, and if you can get conceit right, and also if you do some framing, and some setup and some builds, like they can be exciting. If you're just doing it, I've seen it done terribly also.
I have to. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the movie reviews for this week. And we got two movies, so we're going to try and run through them. But we're going to start here first with Paul Feig's Ghostbusters remake, which came out last weekend.
Oh, boy.
Or the weekend before last. And, yeah, oh, boy is right. Because this is a hard movie to talk about right now.
Well, should we? Okay, can we address, like, okay, to go through, like, my personal controversy. Not even my controversy, my bias.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of the original.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of remakes in general, so that's kind of two strikes. However, when I heard that it was going to be an all-female cast, I was like, oh, that could be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard it was Paul Feig, which I don't really like that much. I don't really like a lot of his stuff that much. I think he's okay. Besides Freaks and Geeks, that's a beautiful thing that him and Jon Apatow did together. And it's beautiful and everyone should watch it.
Yes.
But a lot of his other work I'm kind of about, including a lot of his work with Kristen Wiig. I'm not a huge fan of. I think I actually like her a lot more as a dramatic actress than a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And then Melissa McCarthy is kind of hit or miss. She often does this kind of gross, and I'm not saying that to be, I mean, it sounds snarkier than I really mean it. I'm just saying these are my personal tastes.
Right.
And, but I think Melissa McCarthy can be really great, especially in different things. And so going into the movie, there's this mixed emotion, and then there's this other whole controversies on top of this.
Right. That
drive even weirder biases. The weird man ruining my childhood thing. I'm sorry. Grow the fuck up. Your movie still exists.
Right.
Just the weird ultra masculine like backlash in general is just like, whoa, guys, okay. It's a remake and it's just a movie. And right. Then on top of that, I think that there are just a lot of like people like me who are fans of the original who are just kind of like, I don't know, a remake, guys? I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I think a big thing that's happening right now, especially from the other side, I wrote my review for this already, and I had to address this at the top of the, as we are right now, at the top of the review. I had to frame it within in the context of this movie's almost impossible to have an opinion about right now, because on one side, you're either a neck-bearded, MRA, Gamergate asshole, or you're this social justice warrior, obnoxious, whatever, hyper feminist, blah 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 blah. You're one or the other. Like you can't have a neutral opinion and be like, I'm just a guy who likes to go to movies and I'd rather see original material.
Like, exactly.
Like, and there some people have come out and said that, and then you know immediately people politicize that as
Richard Roper got attacked
for just not liking the movie all that much. And you know, he has a much bigger soapbox than we do. So we'll probably be okay. And you know, we haven't actually gotten into the review yet. So maybe you loved it, but, yeah, I don't know. Like it's been a crazy thing. And I think a lot of this, you know, cause I have heard some people who this vitriol that's come from some of these fans who's like sent racist comments to Leslie Jones, who's one of the actresses in the movies.
That was the other thing. Oh my gosh. That is like sending pictures of gorillas. That is racist. If you don't see that as racist, you are an idiot. I'm just going to say, I usually don't get like this, like this, like straightforward about things, because a lot of times I think there's a little bit nuance or this isn't, that's just straight racism. You guys are horrible people.
Right. And there is a lot of like, you know, there's a lot of this rhetoric online about how like the feminists are taking over the world and blah blah blah, and they're gonna ruin all of our childhoods. And it's like, I'm not so convinced that all of these people are representative of the original like Ghostbusters fan base. I think these are people who are just fucking assholes, and it's an uglier side of the internet that happen to use this movie as their flagship issue to have a bigger voice.
Absolutely agree. I think actual big fans of the Ghostbusters were kind of just maybe hesitant, or maybe they were excited, or at least curious.
Yeah.
I think that there is, the movie's been highly politicized, because I think that there are a lot of, I think it goes on both sides too. I think there are a lot of people who are claiming that the new golden age of cinema is here because of this film.
I think the people, there's been a backlash to the backlash, which is, it's been so vitriolic and so like hated that I feel like there's a large group of critics and, you know, people who are supposed to be sort of objective, and then, you know, and press in general, who's really kind of gotten into this movie's corner to protect it and say, no, this is brilliant and this is better than the original and fuck you. And even the stars of the original Ghostbusters who appear in the movie in bit parts, have come out and been like, no, this is amazing and da 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 da.
Well, I like Ivan Reitman's statement, which he's like, I think a lot of them aren't actually these man haters. They are out there. They absolutely are.
Yeah.
He says a lot of the original are just fans of the original and they like it. And there's nothing wrong with that.
So now that we got that out of the way, I guess I'll set this up a little bit as a story. Kristen Wiig plays this college professor. She works at some hoity-toity college. I want to say it's Columbia or something like that.
It is.
And she gets fired from her job, and she loses tenure because some YouTube footage shows of her past interests in, like, paranormal study, and she's supposed to be, like, an empirical physicist. And she kind of loses credibility, at which point she runs into her old friend, played by Melissa McCarthy, Abby, who's running these kind of weird experiments based upon these old theories that they used to have about paranormal research and ghost hunting. And Abby and Abby's assistant, played by Kate McKinnon, all decide to take up into the attic of a Chinese food restaurant and set up a ghost hunting paranormal research business. That is yet to be named, actually. They don't call themselves the Ghostbusters right out of the gate. And then later, we find out that there's some weird stuff happening in the New York tunnels. And they run into Leslie Jones's character. Leslie Jones, also from Saturday Night Live with Kristen Wiig and Kate McKinnon. And she decides to kind of help them along their way with their first big catch. So, you know, it's a little bit of a mix of some of the stuff we've seen plot-wise, from the first Ghostbusters movie, and then some new elements that they enter in as well. I guess we should say there's also Chris Hemsworth plays their male secretary, who's kind of an oaf and sort of a blonde bimbo.
he is. Yeah. Not sort of.
So, what did you think of Paul Feig's Ghostbusters remake?
Okay, I'm just going to get my blip out there, or whatever you want to call it, where I'm coming from and what it is. I think this is one of the most mediocre movies I've ever seen. I think it has a whole lot of good things, and I think it has a whole lot of kind of cheesy things and bad things.
Okay.
I think that, I'll start with some of the goods. I think that the production design, like how the ghosts look, and everything of that, I think it's heightening the original in a very, like, beautiful and kind of, like, really cool way. I really like how it looks. I think the production design is very, is neat. I like how all the packs look. I like how the movie looks in general.
Yeah.
It's a mixed bag when it comes to the acting. I actually really like Leslie Jones. And I really liked Melissa McCarthy. They both seemed like grounded, real people. Whereas I know that she's like the golden one. So we'll see how people feel about this, but I didn't really like Kate McKenna. Do I get her name right?
Yeah.
I don't feel like she kind of seemed character-esque. And, one thing I really liked about the original Ghostbusters is that they all were just these real dudes. And even though they were scientists, they ended up just being, like blue collar dudes who are catching ghosts. And her and Kristen Wiig, I don't really felt like real people. I felt like they felt like characters. This thing that they set up at the start of the movie that I was really like is this character dynamic between Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig. They kind of lose it. Also, they start out this movie kind of similar to the new one, but they start out with this like Zach Woods and this ghost thing happening. I was way more intrigued by that, those first like few like hauntings than I was to where it went.
Right. In this old mansion. Yeah.
In this old mansion, it looked cool. And it had this weird ethereal kind of like feeling and the characters. And I feel like if they kept it more, a lot of their investigations there, but then I don't know, Chris Hemsworth, I was half and half about, half the time I was like, okay, it's funny. And half the time I was like, okay, this is obnoxious. It really depended from scene to scene. how I felt about it, because there were scenes that I genuinely laughed and I thought were funny, and then there were scenes that I genuinely thought was kind of obnoxious and silly. Kind of like my experience with Bridesmaids. So, if I'm being really honest, the last third where it enters into blockbuster mode, I thought was pretty hollow and kind of boring to watch.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you on most of those points. Except for to say, I don't think it was very funny. Like, almost never. Like, and a lot of this other stuff, like the fact that it's not like the original Ghostbusters, the fact that the storytelling isn't as specific, the fact that the mythology isn't as rich.
Oh, I think it's a lot like the old Ghostbusters, and I think that's a kind of a problem, but...
Well, I mean, beats of the plot-wise, but I don't think that there's... Like, one of the things that I like about the original Ghostbusters, and I wrote about this a little bit, is that there's this whole conceit of sort of, there's a much richer mythology to it. You know, they really did their homework on, like, patching together a kind of original mythology with this whole Gozer and you know, the return of this ancient evil coming back and, you know, turning the center of the city into a lightning rod for the Armageddon and all of this kind of stuff. This movie doesn't really do that. It's just kind of like a vague idea of, like, we're catching ghosts. There's ghosts all over the place. We're going to catch them.
Well, they have the Rowan character, which kind of fulfills that-ish.
There's like a villain character in here who's like this lonely, introverted guy who wants to take revenge out on the world. And he's building this giant thing underneath the city to concentrate ghost energy. They don't really do that much with that. I feel like that's one of the biggest problems with the story structurally is that, you know, you have this A plot and B plot, and the B plot never really gets developed all that much other than to know, like, there's a villain and a secret plan. Whereas I feel like the original film really treated all of its characters and all of its moving parts a lot more carefully. And which is funny because you look at the movie and it feels very loose and improvised. When it comes to the actors' dialogue and that kind of stuff. But, you know, structurally, the movie is still a lot more deliberate than I feel like this movie is, which feels kind of loosey-goosey in a way that, like, they're just forgetting about plot stuff a lot of the times, or story stuff, even more importantly.
Well, what's weird is you brought up the H.P. Lovecraft connection. And yeah, a lot of the mythology building, while it wasn't, like, directly like, this is a Cthulhu monster. Like, they did very much go, okay, we can take that mythology, how he made mythology, and we can stretch it through and kind of take some of his flavors to make this very like a classical structure in a horror sense.
Right, right. And in general, just kind of this occulty kind of stuff that kind of runs throughout the movie, which is very, actually kind of funny because, like, it was like, you know, and then we have these, our heroes of the movie are, like, you know, essentially paranormal occultists, like, in the middle of America's satanic panic. But this movie doesn't have anything very specific about it. And I think that was one of the things I felt very lacking, is it feels a lot more inspired by the tone of Ghostbusters, or the, you know, the ideas of Ghostbusters. I texted a friend of the show, Keith Foster, after I saw the movie to see what he thought, because I came out really deflated. I came out, like, you know, like, kind of, one, bummed out because I, you know, I didn't really like the movie. So I was like, oh, shit. Now everyone's going to think I'm a sexist man, woman hater.
Well, you are, but go on.
And that I'm taking out my personal whatever on this movie. So, you know, I wanted to gauge a reaction because he's a big fan of these comedians and a big fan of, you know, sort of modern comedy in general. And he liked it a little bit more than me, but he said one thing that I thought was kind of spot on. He said, this feels more inspired by the Saturday morning cartoon Ghostbusters than the movie Ghostbusters.
Oh, especially how they, oh, this was, I didn't think a good thing, the Slammer thing towards the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely more cartoony. I think that is a funny kind of way to put it.
I said this felt to me like less like a movie in general and more like Universal Studios Ghostbusters ride featuring modern comedians. Like, like, that's how removed from story it felt to me. Like, they couldn't be that, they never seemed that concerned with actually telling a story.
See, I think their villain is vaguely rooted in a story. But the problem is none of the other characters are in that part of the story. Just things kind of happen to them. The intelligence network kind of just comes along and then they're gone.
A lot of plot stuff kind of arises and then gets dropped completely until it needs to be in the movie again. That's what I mean. There's like the script does not seem very tight.
It does have a vague, not vague. It's pretty on the nose subtext. That it tries to deal with for part of it, where it tries to bring up like her, you know, bringing up the YouTube comments and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I actually think it does it in a fun and light way, but it's just so buried. It's just not connected to, a clean plot line that it's sort of just like, okay. I will say that they do bring in some more like classic ghost stuff, like ley lines and possessions and stuff like that, which I think the original is kind of almost better because they don't do super ghosty stuff. And it's not like we don't have a ton of ghosty stuff right now.
Right. So, I do agree with you that I like the production design a lot.
Oh, yeah. The production design is great.
And I like the look of the gadgets. I like the look of the car. I like the look of the ghosts, like this kind of neon, sort of hologenic kind of thing.
Towards the end, I wasn't as much, again, because I was just, there was so many bright things being hurled at my face. But for that first part, especially, actually, I almost thought I was going to like the movie because of that first act.
Right. The setup with Zach Woods in the haunted house and haunted mansion.
Also, I mean, honestly, the part with Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, their kind of friendship, that felt real. And then it just kind of like, they're like, oh, we're buddies now because we're doing the Ghostbusters thing.
Yeah.
And it just kind of disappeared.
That's another one of those things. Like, if there's two emotional arcs in this movie, if we want to even call them that, or two kind of story elements, it's the thing going on with this villain. And how that's supposed to counter the friendship and community of the Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of loneliness and introvertedness, because he was like some weird, like, worshiper of their early research and blah, blah, blah. That's kind of a story element that's never really groomed or properly treated or to really grow into something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other being Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig's friendship and how they parted ways after a lot of years and kind of come back together. You get a little bit of that, like at the beginning when they see their first ghost and Kristen Wiig is on camera saying, "Ghosts are real!" Like that was kind of funny, you know, as she's like covered in ectoplasm.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, like you said, it just kind of like it becomes a given, like, okay, now they're friends and the movie can go. Like,
well, that was another modern faux pas for me, because any of the things that I would have actually got kind of a giggle out of me were revealed in the trailer. And I feel like that first trailer was terrible, but it was holding back a lot of the jokes. So, and they were trying not to reveal everything. And so it's sort of a weird, that was another weird, like, comedy faux pas thing that they tried to avoid, but then did it anyway. So.
Right. Well, this goes back to my original statement with this. Was I could forgive all of the things I just said if I thought it was all that funny. I laughed rarely. I found myself like about 40 minutes through the movie giving the movie courtesy chuckles, which is like an acknowledgement that there's a joke and a beat for a comedic pause. And then I give it a courtesy chuckle. And about 40 minutes in, I'm like, I'm not going to do that anymore. If this movie's not funny, it's not funny. I'm going to just sit here and let the movie naturally make me laugh. And then once I made that decision, I almost never laughed again. And I really
some of your comments are always so cutting. it's delightful because I think other people when they listen, they're like, man, he's just ripping it apart. But it's really you're just being very bluntly honest how you feel about it.
Yeah,
but
I wanted to like it. That was the thing, is that's why I was giving it courtesy chuckles. Is I was like, okay, movie, I'm on your side. Like, just, you know, do it. Do the thing where you make me laugh. And then you know, some of the Chris Hemsworth stuff I thought was like vaguely funny. Like he was game to do it.
It was at first. And I like the concept of turning the bimbo on its head.
Right.
And some people try to claim that Janine in the original is that
kid, no, I
but
don't.
She's not at all. She's like a secretary.
And she's really like actually like smart and interested and an interesting character. I mean, don't get
me. A grounded character. That's the thing, is the original one, all of the characters are like real people. And I feel like Leslie Jones and Melissa McCarthy were those. But I don't feel like I got enough from Melissa McCarthy because she kind of got buried under a lot of the gags.
So. Right. She doesn't get to be the big Melissa McCarthy character. Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons I don't think this movie's all that funny is I think this cast, specifically Melissa McCarthy and Paul Feig, are all that good at doing PG material. And I think like the funnier stuff in their movies like Spy or Bridesmaids or The Heat is that when they kind of go into raunchier territory or they're allowed to kind of subvert the chick flick narrative through this the kind of darker comedy or more biting
overtly
dialogue
sexual.
Or overtly sexual or whatever it is. This movie doesn't get to do any of that. So instead it just kind of is, I don't know. It feels like it's awkwardly trying to paddle around something it can never reach.
Some of your arguments I don't necessarily touch on as much, and some of it's just because I haven't seen some of the films that you've seen. This is one of those weird ones where I think we just mostly agree and there's nothing to really like bat back and forth with because I can't, yeah. There's nothing I can like look at that you're saying and say no. Like, and that's what we kind of try to do a little bit. And I'm just like, yeah, okay. So I think there it is for you folks. We didn't really, I think it's very unflatteringly mediocre.
That's what I would say. I'd say it's not like the worst movie any of these actors have been in. And it's not going to ruin your childhood or whatever. I think it's kind of a non-entity, honestly.
You know what's weird though? I do have this one thought, and maybe you'll feel wrong about this, but I would like to see another director come in and give, and I mean, and this seems like almost like, well, duh, he's kind of great, but I'd love to see somebody like Edgar Wright come in here and step in. And not just because he's a good director, but also because like I was thinking about Scott Pilgrim. And a lot of that has a lot of PG-13 humor to it.
Well, yeah, and there's a quickness. See, that's a difference between the two projects. Is there's a quickness and a tightness and a deliberateness to that movie. Whereas this movie, I mean, partly, you know, they had the comic book that they could go off of. So that was kind of doing a lot of the story stuff for them.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie, I think the classic study, and like you could look at the two movies, is like just the difference between how comedies are made now and then. A lot of the movies I think that are being made now are not going to be as timeless.
Well, and they did know back then when to improvise and when to have a story.
Right.
It has very little to do. This more has to do with modern times and less to do with sex.
Stuff I was actually interested in, and I wanted to see how they treated that. I didn't want the movie to be all about it,
yeah.
But I was interested to see like, okay, like that could be cool. And there's a lot you could do with that. And they don't really like, you know,
they almost do the, Silence of the Lambs kind of, they have these female characters interacting with a lot of these male patriarchal characters.
Yeah.
But it doesn't pay off in the
no I would say the biggest problem is the movie's not that funny, but after that, you know, for all of the hullabaloo around it, this movie's not a feminist film. Like it's not, I mean, other than the general sense that the women are the lead, so there's a, you know, I guess a political gesture in that, but other than that, you know, like if there had never been any other Ghostbusters, if this was the first we've ever heard of Ghostbusters, it was just this new comedy starring these actresses, I think, and we were just judging it on other Paul Feig comedies and other movies these actresses have been in, I think people would be a lot less forgiving. I think a lot people would just be like, oh yeah, that was a kind of weird sci-fi one they did with ghosts. It was whatever.
Right. I think it's a nice sentiment that it's doing. It doesn't necessibarily do anything.
Yeah, that's
other than make a huge controversy and backlash. So if that was your end goal, you've succeeded in that.
Right. The controversy is I try not to think about it as much as possible. But unfortunately, I think that is what the movie's going to be remembered for, because the movie itself is not that memorable.
the bias is inherently there, and whether you want it, it's going to sneak in, and it's going to sneak into people's reviews. You were talking about like actual like people who like actual reviewers and stuff like that. I'm not saying we're not actual reviewers, but what I am saying
is people who are paid for it.
Yeah, yeah. They lean one way or the other.
Oh, I've seen
because of the political side of this.
I've seen ridiculous headlines by professional film critics that say, "Sorry, Ghost Bros, this one's better."
Yeah,
and I don't even read those reviews. I'm just like, "Oh, fuck off!" Like well, and I'm not saying like, yes, the Ghost Bros, if that's what we're going to call it.
But what
they're a problem. And the internet is a problem, and there's so much ugliness online. I can't even bear it sometimes. I have to like bury my head in a pillow and scream into a void at how evil and dark this world is. But you can't lay all of that on this movie and decide like that's not being objective. I'm looking at this as a story. I'm looking at this as a comedy. It's not very good at being either.
Sorry, that was a natural laugh. So you got me with your screaming into the pillow. It's true. But this is the thing is I think that this was just this movie was just a medium to channel that vitriol that exists between these two entities at the moment.
Right.
And but what I was saying about it specifically is the bias is there. Like you can't take that out of reviews either. So, I mean, that's why I wanted to just right out of the gate say, this is here. This is what we have to talk about it.
Right. Movies don't exist in a vacuum and you have to contextualize all of that stuff. And so we did,
but we're kind of trying to not be a part of it. So,
right.
Well, I mean, that is the goal though, is to be very honest and blunt, even outside of your bias, your tastes, everything like that.
All right, let's go ahead and get into Star Trek Beyond, and I'll let you set it up.
This Star Trek, if you've seen any of these, you know, for the last, 50 years, 60 years, this has the original cast. It's the Kirk and all of them, and they're this kind of almost catches you back up to, like, where the original movies were, where these guys, they've gone on the five-year mission. They're starting to transition into bigger, like, positions. And they're starting to kind of be pulled apart by the day-to-day grind of being out in the galaxy and fighting aliens and diplomacy and things of that nature. And so this movie, I think, is actually very much channeling the original Star Trek in a beautiful way. Basically, what's set up is that they go out, they find a distress signal, and they go out in space and they investigate it.
Never a good idea.
And then they find out that it's a hostile alien, it's a Star Trek movie. It's actually a lot like a lot of the original episodes, just kind of like stretched out. But what it does is it really, one thing that I really was kind of moved by, maybe more so because of being a nerd and also just the dark vitriol we were talking about. they have this like futuristic space base with it. It's all hopeful and all these creatures, these species and all these people working and living in harmony.
Yeah. Big utopia.
And it felt warm and fuzzy. You don't see, we only see dystopia anymore. And so it was nice to have that Star Trek difference. And they didn't really have those in the other movies either.
That kind of sense of optimism.
Well, that sense of optimism, just warmness, know, the future can be a bright and hopeful place. That being said, this became just kind of an actioneer, bad guy has MacGuffin kind of movie, like the other two are.
Yeah.
But if you enjoy the characters, I think you'll enjoy this film. I don't think it's like the best movie ever or whatever, but I enjoyed its just kind of warmness and its fluffiness and just being a blockbuster.
I like this movie a lot, and I'm with you. I think this feels the most like Star Trek that we've seen from the Bad Robot Star Trek reboot series.
Agreed.
And it is the least ambitious of the three, and I think it's the smallest, most contained story, but I like that. I don't think that movies always have to reach for the stars. That feels like a bad pun, but I don't think the movies always have to be these ultra epic, upping the ante 17 climax kind of movies. I like, which is one of the things I think that some people felt about the last one, Star Trek Into Darkness, which I still defend. I think it was a fine enough movie. I don't get why people hated it as much as they did. But this one feels a little bit more Search for Spock, or feels a little bit more like the fourth one. The Journey Home? Is that what it's called?
The one with the whales?
The one with the whale one.
Yeah, that's the one.
This one kind of feels a little bit more like it's kind of a one-off.
See, I thought they were going to do the Prison Planet one, which I think is 6, mm-hmm. Undiscovered Country, because that's just what it looked like with all these aliens. And they did kind of do that a little bit. But but this is so much just like, to me, it's like an original Star Trek like episode.
Yeah, like it does feel like that. And it does feel kind of small. And I think some people who liked the first two movies or expect a certain bigness from their blockbusters might come away with this feeling like it's inconsequential.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually like that, the kind of lower stakes of this movie. It's not about them trying to, well, there is a save the universe moment in the movie, but it's more about like, you know, the two big set pieces are on this utopian planet towards the end, and then them really just trying to rescue the red shirts mm-hmm. who all get captured in this invader base.
And it's about emotional stakes, which can raise the stakes of a movie just as much, because that end battle was more of a battle for the soul of you know, this utopian dream mm-hmm. than it was about, you know, actually destroying the universe. And that's exactly what these movies should be. And it's done in a very classical way. But what's funny is classical is almost refreshing now, because mm-hmm. we have so much of the Uber plot, which The Dark Knight is awesome. I liked the first two Star Trek films as well. But we just have such a glut of it now that just a fresh, nice emotional stakes movie feels good. Also, what I loved about this is we got to see more than Spock and Kirk.
Yeah, this is really, I think, with the exception of Zoe Saldana as Uhura, who doesn't get a whole lot to do, agreed. I think this is one of the ones that feels the most like an ensemble. And the movie cleverly like separates the characters into different situations once they crash land on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you get a little bit from each one of them, and they all get to have their own little mini story within the big story. And I love these characters, and I love the way that they're portrayed by these actors. Carl Urban, I always forget how fucking great he is as Bones
right.
until I watch another one of these movies. Like, why are you not a huge movie star right now?
Well, I think that's a big takeaway of this specific one. It was like, yeah, he can hold the movie too. Just as well as Chris Pine or
Zachary Quinto.
Thank you.
Yeah.
One thing I will say, though, is because it gave a lot of the characters their own like seconds and minutes. Mm-hmm. Anytime I even heard Anthony Yelchin, like, I teared up. Like, I haven't done that ever for an actor. And I don't know why, but it really made me sad. So there is that if you were a fan of Anton Yelchin, but at the same time, it was nice to see him.
Like, yeah, he got a little bit more to do in this movie, as Chekhov, and that stuff was fun. I really like some of the ideas for the set pieces. There's, like I said, my favorite set piece of the movie is that one where they rescue the red shirts. You know, and they get to play around with this, with the rules of their fake Star Trek technology, and, you know, the limitations of older technology versus newer technology. And I think all of that's a lot of fun.
Mine was the ship battles. I don't know why, but it's just like, yeah, starship kind of like biplane fighting weird stuff in space. I was like, yeah, that feels right. This is like, it should be like a submarine movie for at least like 15 minutes. So.
Yeah, I mean, my only complaints with the movie is I think there's some of the story elements here of Zachary Quinto is feeling kind of, like you said, sort of ennui because he finds out that Earth One Spock, I don't know what you want to call him, but the Leonard Nimoy Spock had died as Leonard Nimoy in real life has died. Mm-hmm. And now he feels all this kind of this need to propagate Vulcans, and he maybe wants to leave the Enterprise to kind of explore his Vulcan heritage or whatever. And then you have Chris Pine, who's coming on the same year his father, who was played by Chris Hemsworth, the same year that he died, he's coming, now he's a year older, and now he feels like there's a weight of, like, responsibility, and is he doing what he should be doing? And I guess, like, this, the adventure of this movie is supposed to sort of iron out those character flaws or those character dilemmas. And I don't know what it is about this particular plot that does that for them. Like, by the end of the movie, they're like, I guess we're cool.
Oh, I guess I kind of disagree with you on that point. But to me, anyways, the way that it worked out for Captain Kirk is that he worked it out through this is a thing worth fighting for. I'm doing it for me. I'm not doing it just for my father. Like, that's what he's like. This is a future worth fighting for. Mm-hmm. And you get that because that's the battle between him and the Idris Elba
villain
thing.
Crawl.
Space vampire.
Yeah.
But then the Spock one, I feel like, is worked out through it's a battle between, like, he feels like a commitment to his tribe, which is a big fight that we all have right now, talking about all this stuff, or the betterment of everybody else, which is a very classical Star Trek kind of story. And so I felt like those were ironed out. I guess a little bit more I did feel like it was very, very fluffy, and that last act, even though I was invested in it, I was still kind of like, it's a blockbuster. So it didn't necessarily raise any stakes there, and it doesn't always have to. I was glad it didn't, but at the same time, like, I can't help but leave the movie and be like, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't want to reinvent the wheel, but I kind of appreciate that about it. Okay, so this one's directed by Justin Lin, who did the Fast and the Furious movies, as opposed to J.J. Abrams, who did the first two. And I think the transition is pretty seamless. I don't feel like it's not Tim Burton to Joel Schumacher.
Sure. I didn't have a problem with it being Justin Lin, just to clarify. I didn't like the shaky cam sometimes. I just put the camera and show me things.
Some of the editing of the action is a little bit more chopped up, and some of the... Yeah, there is a little bit more shaky cam than there had been previously, but
I didn't enjoy that. And sometimes I thought it was kind of distracting compared to what was happening in the scene. Sometimes in an action scene, it adds to it. And sometimes when you're just two characters talking, you don't need it.
Yeah, I had more of an issue with the fast editing of the action necessarily than the camera work. But going back to my original thing, basically Abrams' take on Star Trek was a little bit of Star Wars and a little bit of kind of Spielberg and, you know, the mixing of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you get a decent amount of that here too, but unlike the Abrams movies, which kind of felt like Star Wars, to me, this feels almost more like Indiana Jones. Maybe it's just because I just watched it, but the pacing of it, the adventure quality of it, of like, oh, we're stuck in this crazy situation. Now I got to get out. Like, and the fact that it's a little bit more terrestrial than we've seen in all of the other Star Trek movies. Like, this one is pretty locked on this planet, so a lot of the action is on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of had the build and the pace of an Indiana Jones film to me.
Oh, interesting. I just saw a classic Star Trek episode.
Well, yeah, as well as that.
that was the strongest flavor I got. I mean, there is a bit of an adventure film, but I mean, that's not necessarily different from, you know, Khan or Search for Spock or any of those. They're all adventure films too, to a small degree. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is an innate difference between I think the movies do have to kind of lean into the blockbuster quality of them.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the best ones, like some of the ones we've mentioned, the Star Trek movies, they are adventure films. But some of the, like if we take the first Star Trek film, where they wanted to be like 2001 Space Odyssey, and there was a lot of floating and stuff. That one's a lot more boring.
Of like that movie for just how.
Oh, I still like it, but
I like it. Star Trek, like, it because it did it. Not want. It had no interest in being entertainment. it was trying to be so high minded that it's almost kind of ridiculous. But it's such a time capsule of that time period.
Well, there's also the God one, and that one, I guess, was an adventure film, but that's actually the only one I dislike.
Yeah, things got weird. But I like this one, and I think that people who have not been a big fan of the Star Trek movies, the Bad Robot Star Trek movies, because they are bigger fans of the original, they might, I want to put an asterisk there, they might like this one more, or they might feel a little bit more like Star Trek to them than those other two did.
Yeah, I would like to say yes from my perspective, but yes, fanboy nature is a fickle mistress at best.
Right.
I hope people dig it, because I did. I mean, I'm not, again, it's funny because some of the great qualities of it, I feel like, are some of the negative qualities and make it almost kind of like so light and fluffy. But this is something I could just throw in and watch. And I'd honestly, I think I might have enjoyed this one the most.
You know,
the new Star Treks, just because it is, to me, this one feels the most like Star Trek. And so that's kind of the, just that emotional quality that they tapped into. It did it for me.
Yeah.
That being said, I you said Indiana Jones. What I was thinking a lot of was Mission Impossible movies, especially the last few, and how hollow a lot of their adventures are. That's kind of, I kind of felt like that was kind of, and with this, maybe that was a primed thing, or maybe that's a connection thing, because Simon Pegg is in both, but.
Mm-hmm. And Simon Pegg also co-wrote this one.
Yeah, I know. Correct. And produced. I liked it mostly. I try to be honest about it, about the negatives as well, but mostly I think I like it, and I think I like it more than the other ones, because it's Star Trek. It's original Star Trek, and I don't really, and those negatives kind of go by the wayside as I kind of think and feel how I actually like.
Well, and this one
felt during the movie.
This one felt the least encumbered by plot hurdles. Like, you know, the first one had to like reboot the whole series, introduce all these new actors, and like had this whole sort of postmodern folding the universe in on itself kind of thing to wipe the slate clean. So I had a lot to do. The second one was kind of retelling one of the old stories, and also had to integrate all of this kind of post 9/11 inside job kind of thing going on, government inside job, truth or Robert Orky stuff.
Well, then also balancing the whole con story.
Yeah, exactly. So that,
and I understand the people that didn't like it because of it was hitting on all the beats. If you can knock Star Wars, Ghostbusters, any of these films for those reasons, that one certainly deserves it as well. I still enjoyed it, but it definitely was stealing beats from another movie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, both the first two movies mirror certain beats from the other movies. I'm sure this one does as well. But I feel like this one feels the most contained, and it's like, now that we have this new universe, just start making your own damn movies. And they did. And I think that it feels a lot less encumbered because of it. It feels more free to just be itself.
And also because you get a focus on the characters.
Yeah. Which I think all three movies have done really well. I wouldn't have cared about these characters in this movie if they'd not done some pretty good legwork in the first two.
They did, but this one it gets to be the bread and butter of the piece. And honestly, that's one of the, to me at least, that's one of the best parts of Star Trek.
Okay, let's get into the Netflix homework, which you assigned me 9 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's called We Are Still Here.
Did you have a hard time in your mind? Because I did a little bit with the, there was another horror movie we watched, We Are What We Are.
Yeah.
I had a hard time. I'd keep mixing up the two titles, but it is We Are Still Here.
Yes, this came out last year, independently released, directed and written by Ted Geoghegan?
Sure.
Geoghegan? I don't know. He has a somewhat hard to pronounce last name. And the story here is a haunted house flick. A couple who just lost their adult son in a car accident is going off to live in this new house in kind of a secluded small town in the middle of winter. And they find out there's this house has a history. There's some dark stuff that's been going on. A neighbor kind of fills them in on some possible murders and, dangerous and illegal activity that took place with the previous owners of this house. The mother feels that the son's spirit is still around and is talking to her, but it may be something darker. They invite some hippie friends to come and do a seance. Things get kind of fucked up. What did you think?
Well, the setup that you're saying is a very typical ghost story setup, and it's a very typical ghost story. But what I would say is I really like how the atmosphere of the film. I think it's pretty, I think it's very dark. I think that they kind of toss away some of the typical beats. Like there's a point where these teenagers come in and you think it's going to be about them, and then you realize quite quickly that it is not. The story kind of, I don't feel like this is a spoiler. Correct me if I'm wrong, though. This becomes very much not just a ghost story, but characters versus the town story, sort of a Wicker Man or
sure.
Halloween yeah. 3 or, you know, to bring up Lovecraft again, the Innswich story. The Horror of Innswich or whatever it is.
Yeah, or what was that one movie, the one Wake and Flight? Kind of had a little mm-hmm. bit of that too, where
sure.
this guy's stuck in this weird town and everyone's being really weird kind of thing. Well,
it's about the townspeople.
Yeah.
Being kind of coalescing and Dead and Buried. That's another film that I thought of. Really cool. Us versus the town kind of story. Now I dig those. So I'm kind of a sucker for those stories. So, mm-hmm. I liked this. I thought it was a weird, they did some things too that current ghost stories aren't. They made it a lot, more visceral, we'll say.
Okay.
And they had all these, like, everything was combining against the people in these house. At first I was kind of almost distracted by the weird characters, but then I sort of grew to be like, no, this is kind of it's fun that they are kind of different. And, you brought them up with these, this friend, new agey couple. Mm-hmm. They are very new agey. But I think kind of authentically, I really dug this. I thought it was a really neat little, doing the classic ghost story, but kind of tweaking and playing with some of the tropes in them.
Right. I'm not with you on this one.
Well, you're wrong.
This is where we're going to sharply disagree. I thought this movie was pretty bad on pretty much all accounts. There's something about it that feels really amateurish to me. And I get it's a low budget and, you know, maybe the guy hadn't made a lot of movies before it. Most of these actors are unknown. That's why I didn't really bother naming them as I was going through the synopsis. A lot of the pacing feels like he's trying to stretch out things. And I think people are, you know, people who like the movie are going to call it a slow burn. I think it's just poorly paced. I think that the dialogue is god awful. Maybe 90% of the movie's problem. Nobody in this movie talks about anything other than the plot. I never get a sense that these are real people. I feel like these are people that this guy wrote on a piece of paper. And it's acted almost just as bad. Some of the act, especially the male lead, Andrew Sensenig, I guess is his name. It feels almost, it got to a point into the movie where it was like, is this supposed to feel this way? Is this not just a badly acted movie? Or is he trying to make it feel like a badly acted movie? Like, is he going for something? Is this some sort of weird style that I don't understand? Where he's like, because a lot of it felt very soap opera-ish, especially in the camera setups with a lot of the close-ups and that kind of stuff, and how kind of flatly choreographed the dialogue sequences were, and then on top of how bad the dialogue was. And I was not really on board. I would say when the movie, at least for me, got entertainingly bad was when it shifts its gear into full schlock mode and then blood spraying everywhere. And then at least, you know, I can just have some fun at the gore effects and the creature effects and that kind of stuff. I do think that the kind of look of the paranormal ghosts in here, the kind of charred body thing, looks really cool. And it's not something we've normally seen in ghost movies, like you said. Like, it's not like, you know, traditional vapors or like your James Wan kind of demon-y things. Like, it's a look. And if this movie gets remembered for anything, I think it's going to be that. But yeah, there's this sense of history they try to build up with, like, you know, it's really clumsily executed and bad exposition. And then at the end of the movie, during the credits, they show these, like, newspaper clippings of all the stuff that's happened in this house since the 1800s. And it was infinitely more interesting, this little idea they had, than the way it's set up in the movie. I don't know. I wasn't too into it. Like I said, it kind of gets cuckoo bananas towards the last third and just becomes a heads will roll, you know, blood fest. And then I was kind of into it on a cheesy sort of 80s slasher kind of vibe. But yeah, I'm not into it.
Dear listening audience, which I'm addressing I believe there's four or five of you. Cassidy is so wrong. It's sickening. Don't listen to him. He watched it on a laptop. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm here to guide you through this. This is atmospheric. I think it's very much in line with something like House of the Devil, and I can't believe some of the things you've said is so wrong. I didn't have a problem with the acting. I think you are trumping up things that aren't actually there. To be honest, yeah, no, I really dug this. I thought it was a really cool, and I think if you're into some of the newer, more modern horror things that have come out, I think you'll dig this too, including some of the things that I've mentioned, House of the Devil. It doesn't necessarily pull out the slow burn as long as that movie does, because this movie shifts gears pretty quick, and I'm glad it did, because if it was a typical ghost kind of thing, it would be boring, but I like this. And you have this camera that constantly creeps up on the house. And I liked how it was shot. I'm a sucker for that. So maybe that gave me a few more points. I was also able to see it. Yeah, I'm taking jabs at you. I don't even care. Also, I think that the visceralness actually adds like a real quality. You go, the ghost can actually do something. Mm-hmm. They're not just gonna just wander behind me for the next 50 years, which most ghost stories rely on.
Yeah.
I like the town people combining, and I also liked the other stuff. I did think that the little, like, news clips were neat, but I thought that was a part of the layered in texture of the story. The people that wrote this definitely knew what each person had done and how they added to it. And why each character was there. So I very much against your review. That being said, I love you as a friend and as a person. And we're just going to disagree on this. So, do you want to fight? Let's box. Like, I think that's the only way we could really settle this.
We have to come to fisticuffs.
I do think that we just have to fight, physically. I don't think our words can really do anything more in this situation.
I will say, I guess I'm in the minority. The movie has a barely, 5.7 on
IMDb. They're always cute.
I think that's generous, to be honest. Sorry. I mean, you'd say it's framed well. I get there's some subjective camera stuff that's like, oh, you're in the ghost's point of view now. But it felt so obvious every time.
But it's not from the ghost's point. But it is not from the ghost's point of view. That creeping from the outside is the townspeople. So you're wrong. Go on.
Still. Every time it went to subjective camera, and I knew that you're supposed to have a voyeuristic vibe or whatever, it felt so obvious to me, and it felt so like every choice that was made in this movie was so chosen that I was always thinking about the director's choices, and not in like a, oh, it's trying some really stylish stuff here, like in a, oh, this guy just got out of film school kind of way. I don't know. I to me, the movie just in general felt really amateurish to me.
If you're a horror fan, which Cassidy claims to be, I am.
I disagree. And a lot of the movies that you compared this to, I like.
I know. I'm kidding. I hope you know that. I know you get defensive when I do that, but I'm just kidding. No, I enjoy this. Cassidy didn't. So I don't know what you should take away from that, listening audience. If you like, I can't say if you like horror, because Cassidy does. I don't understand his criteria for some of these, because some of them he likes and doesn't. I'm not in the minority of our friends that feel that way either. sometimes, but that goes for everybody. Sometimes you just can't tap into what another person feels or thinks about a film. So
I'm blown away that it's like, it's this like controversial to have this, to have an opinion that this movie's garbage.
Well, I might mean we might be heightening it because we were so like agreeing on everything before. I'm not sure if that's what, but no, I really did like this film. So some of the things you said, I was just kind of like, I just let you say it. And I didn't contradict you. I didn't say anything during it. I let you have your opinion. That is very wrong.
You didn't think that the dialogue was at least lacking?
No, I didn't. I didn't think it was that stuff. I was in it. I thought the atmosphere was pretty rich, and I thought it was a pretty interesting take on, especially considering a lot of the ghost stories lately. I think that your perception is completely bananas. I think you got off of work and you watched this and you were pissed off at that guy in line and you were so bored that you, that ennui that you get at work transferred over to the movie. I think you're insane. That shit crazy.
Listeners, this is imperative. I need to know if I'm not taking crazy pills or that I fell asleep in the first 15 minutes and dreamed a worse movie.
Did you?
I don't think so. Listeners, watch. We are still here. Send us a letter. We need a third voice in this.
Because it'll probably be Patrick and I'll win. So I feel okay.
You know what? Something, anything. Is this movie any good at all? Because I don't see it. Like I said, I kind of like the end when it gets fun and bloody and people's heads are getting shot off. I'm into that.
And I think it shifts gears there. If it hadn't have shifted gears, I might have been more in line and been like, this is a very boring kind of schlocky film. But then once it shifts gears, I go, oh, okay, this is what you are and this is what you're doing. But I thought some of the plotting was actually quite interesting and quite fun. And done well. I don't know what your problem is.
If it was a townsfolk versus the family kind of thing, I just wish that had been treated a little bit more or had been integrated in the plot in a little more of an interesting way. Things just kind of happen because I feel like characters are only introduced in this movie so that certain scenes can happen. Usually scenes involving somebody's death. Yeah, I don't know. To me, this movie felt so amateurish and so like somebody's first movie.
But that's not what was happening. You're wrong.
I'm going to look right now to see if it was this guy's first movie before I commit to that opinion. He has 3 directing credits. We Are Still Here is his first feature. He did a movie called International Playboy's First Movies, Ghouls Gone Wild. In 2004.
Awesome title.
So there you go.
That doesn't mean anything though. Tons of people have great first films. In fact, one of the ones that I brought up, House of the Devil, was his first feature. So yes. This is his first feature. That doesn't actually say that much.
No, yeah. And still my favorite movie of the year, The Witch, that was Robert Eggers' first feature. Yeah, a lot of people make good first feature genre films.
I don't think they ever make a good film after that, too.
Yeah, that is
awesome. Wicker Man, one of the ones I brought up earlier, which I don't think this is like Wicker Man, by the way, because that is a genre unto itself.
Sure.
It just has the townspeople combined. When talking about that was his first and only film, and then when he... that only lends so much credibility. I think that this film it's well shot. I think that the characters are a little kooky and they're not like A-level actors, but nobody is. So I don't feel like it really takes away from the, I don't think it takes away from the presence of the film. I had a fun with it and I'm not saying that it's this, top tier, like very slick Conjuring type film. Because the acting isn't always at that point, but I kind of didn't want that. I did get some of that. I got a little bit of B movie. I got a little bit of modern horror. I got a little bit of a lot of things out of this. So I just cannot agree with you. We're done.
Next week, we're going to be reviewing Joe Dante's Explorers, which came out the year of my birth, 1985, and has a young River Phoenix and Ethan Hawke. I just listened to Joe Dante on Mark Maron, and they were talking about this, so, and I realized I'd never actually seen it. Weirdly enough, even though I've seen a lot of those kind of, like, post-Amblin movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to catch up with it.
Joe Dante, especially during that period, I think was very... He was on a hot streak, and so I like to watch directors in their kind of their prime versus other periods.
Like now? So, yeah.
I did watch Burying the X. That was... I wanted it to be good.
All right, and that's the show. If anybody has anything to say, especially about We Are Not Here, but as well as anything we may have brought up in this episode, what's your dream cast for the live-action Pokemon movie? Email us at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. Also, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Follow us on Twitter at jabberpodcast. Subscribe to us and listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Player.fm, Pocket Cast, Zune, and the Windows Podcast Network. Read my reviews that I post weekly on the from the Idaho State Journal on saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. I also have some content over at the Seattle-based website MacGuffin at mcguff.in/authors/Cassidy. Brad may or may not be continuing panelandframe.com. I haven't seen an article posted on his Facebook in a while, so I don't know. Panelandframe.com, where he talks about comics, criticism, movies, and the like.
You could go to the actual website. You don't. Not everything is run through Facebook. I know the world disagrees with me on that, but
but that's
I'm just saying.
That's how I know when things have been posted. is through Facebook or Twitter.
That's how I know things happen in the world, is through the Facebook.
Essentially, I mean, I tell old people and you that when I Facebook is essentially like my newspaper. Like, yeah, people post their personal shit or whatever, and that's kind of fun. But for me, I'm scrolling through to see what's happening in the world.
You can get that from it. Yeah. If you're connected to the right people.
Right. Well, they also have the ticker now on the side that shows you, like, you know, you can click on the science link or the politics link or the entertainment link or whatever.
I have qualms.
Yeah.
Go on.
We have friends that do podcasts. You should listen to them too. Leland at dampercast.com. Ron Denise down here in Southern California at The Listening Party. And Patrick, who we mentioned, just may or may not weigh in on the our disagreement of
he should. He's our best podcast friend.
And Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational, which you were just on.
Yes, I was. It was delightful. What was funny is I actually went back and listened to that episode because I realized while just listening to a little bit of it that I didn't hear like half of what Dennis had said because of technical difficulties, which they address at the very end. But we had some Skype issues. So.
Oh, okay. Because I didn't notice it. So they must have edited around that pretty well.
Oh, Patrick is actually, I think, really good at taking like blips. Like he'll like write down, oh, that was an issue. Oh, that was an issue. So so he can be very timely on how he edits and.
There you go. It's episode 92, Purging Automation Classes, which you guys talk a little bit about the purge and a lot of bit about unemployment.
unemployment and automation, because automation is a large driving factor of that. And people don't want to talk about it. They want to talk about manufacturing jobs going across seas and immigration and all that stuff.
Okay, and that's it. We'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.